the vocabulary around choice and these things is very much a misnomer, because the abortion industry provides a single choice.
I think that's why it's so important that our team is there to communicate to the women that we're there to empower them.
Erin Fowler and Rhonda K. Moreland run an organization called Birth Choice. It's a pregnancy resource center in Dallas, Texas.
We have done a lot of effort to make sure that we are kind of providing for the whole experience for the woman.
Sometimes called crisis pregnancy centers, these facilities offer services like free pregnancy tests, and sometimes resources like diapers or baby clothes, even classes and counseling. Their main focus, though, is to persuade women to not have abortions and support those who continue their pregnancies.
As you probably saw on your way in, when you park, is that we have sidewalk counselors. And the sidewalk counselors are out there praying, obviously praying for an end to abortion, but also kind of serving as the last line of defense for clients that are going into the abortion clinic.
As states have restricted abortion access in recent years, these facilities have gotten more attention and a lot more clients.
The sidewalk counselors will often, you know, encounter them, whether it's in their car, hand them a flyer that has our information on it.
I'm Gustavo Arellano. You're listening to The Times, daily news from the LA Times. It's Wednesday, June 15th, 2022. Today, with Roe v. Wade expected to be overturned, can pregnancy centers offer enough support to women with unplanned pregnancies? And will that stop them from getting an abortion, even if it's illegal? Here to talk to me about this is my LA Times colleague and Houston bureau chief, Molly Hennessy Fisk. Molly, welcome to the Times.
Thanks for having me.
So you hear the term pregnancy center, and most folks probably think, oh, Planned Parenthood or some local clinic, but they have a very specific purpose. What are they? What do they offer? And where can you find them?
So pregnancy centers are nonprofits. They provide a bunch of different resources to women who are pregnant or think they might be pregnant. Things like pregnancy tests, ultrasounds, counseling, information about adoption, maternity homes. And a lot of these services, like the testing and the ultrasounds, are all free. But they are not providing any kind of abortion referrals or abortions. And they're pretty clear about that.
Are there a lot of them? How many of them are there in the United States?
So in total, there are about 2,500 of these pregnancy centers across the country. And the proportion of pregnancy centers to abortion clinics has grown over time. There's about three times as many pregnancy centers as abortion clinics. And that's even higher in states like Texas, where I am, because a lot of abortion clinics have been forced to close because the state has passed pretty restrictive laws. So it's a lot more likely that a woman who's looking for services, who thinks she might be pregnant or knows she's pregnant, will go into a pregnancy center rather than an abortion clinic.
And you went to Dallas to a place called Birth Choice, and you met there Rhonda and Erin. What's Birth Choice like, and how many people use its services?
So Birth Choice is one of these pregnancy centers. It actually opened in 2009.
So I'm Rhonda K. Moreland, and I'm the chairman of the board. And Erin Fowler, our executive director.
Rhonda chairs the board of it. She has been involved since 2009, since the founding of it.
I want you to get the full experience of what it's like for somebody just to completely walk up.
Erin is the executive director, so he runs the day-to-day operations, working with their staff. They have about 9 staff members, 2 of whom are registered nurses.
So this is kind of where their journey begins, with the opportunity that they have here for counseling or free services of any kind.
They serve about 1,000 people a year, and many of the people that they see are in crisis. They're overwhelmed. They feel like they don't have a lot of choices either because they have financial limitations. They have housing issues. They might be coming out of a domestic violence situation. Some are very young, youths like 12, 14 years old.
The number one thing that clients come here is to find out if they're pregnant. And so we have pregnancy tests that are approved by the nurses.
Their services are free. They do offer pregnancy testing, ultrasounds, counseling.
This is a place where we stage a lot of the supplies.
The baby boutique, it says.
Clients, yes. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
The baby boutique.
There's a lot of stuff in here.
A lot of categories.
And they work with other members of what they call the pregnancy help movement. So places that handle adoption, maternity homes that provide places for women to stay when they're pregnant and even afterwards.
You mentioned that these kinds of centers are anti-abortion. Is there typically a religion affiliation as well?
Yeah, so the pregnancy centers have religious affiliation. Some are non-denominational Christian, some are evangelical, but many historically have been Catholic, and that's what Birth Choice is. They have a Catholic chapel at the center.
Now, I see Pope John Paul down here, little picture, but I also see there's a saint up here. Is that...
She's a fantastic story. So that's St. John Amola. She was a doctor, and she is the patron of the pro-life movement because she was a medical professional that had a complication for her pregnancy. And this is, you know, quite a while back before we have several advancements. But she chose to allow her child to be born and brought into this world. But unfortunately, she died.
And staff go there. Some pray after they meet with women. Others just come for the afternoon prayer.
For the sake of his sorrow profession, have mercy on us and on the whole world.
And some of the prayers that they say are about working for an end to abortion.
Help all to realize that the right to life bestowed on us by you, Lord God, cannot be removed or diminished by a court.
So the work that they do, sort of their feelings about abortion, are really rooted in religion.
And in these days, set our nation on a course of rejecting the violence of abortion and treating children in the womb with equal justice.
Many of these pregnancy centers actually get a lot of their money from state governments, especially in Texas. How reliant are they, though, on this sort of funding?
So the Associated Press recently found that 13 states have spent $495 million since 2010 to help fund the centers, including at least $89 million this fiscal year. Texas funds them. It's up to $100 million over this year and next. Now, that funding has increased over the years, not only in Texas, but in other states. And it's expected to increase more if Roe gets overturned and states grow these networks of pregnancy centers as this alternative safety net for women who don't have the option of getting abortions. Birth Choice, for them, the state funding is just a fraction of their overall funding. So they got about $116,000 out of that $100 million, and their overall budget is about $600,000 to $700,000. So the rest of that money comes from private donors and from grants.
The people who run these pregnancy centers, what role do they see themselves in the fight over abortion?
The way they described it to me is that they see themselves as a support network for women to really give them the ability to make the choice they want to make without concerns about things like finances and housing and job and all these other factors in their life that stress them out and make them feel like they need or have to get an abortion.
All the clients are seeking answers. There's either a lack of clarity, a lack of confidence in making a decision one way or another. And so that is something primary focus for us, is to provide clarity and context to the challenges that they're experiencing.
Originally in the pregnancy help movement, folks were really targeting what they called abortion-minded women, women who were determined to get abortions and trying to change their minds and get them into the pregnancy centers to kind of make their pitch to them. Now, a lot of places like Birth Choice are reaching out and trying to reach women who are determined to have abortions, but they're also trying to help what they call the service-seeking women or the parenting-minded women who really want to not have an abortion, but they have all these other factors in play in their lives.
Any stage of the journey is different for everyone. Some make a tremendous leap of, you know, courage going from the challenges they experience regarding an unplanned pregnancy to what they do afterwards. And we want to provide the opportunities for them to continue to succeed, because sometimes that journey changes.
Coming up after the break, one woman's journey to Birth Choice. Molly, while you were at Birth Choice in Dallas, you met a few women who were seeking help from them, and one of them wants to be identified by the first letter of her middle name, L. What's L's story?
So L is 27 years old.
You don't want us to use your name, right?
Correct.
Okay, so can we just say...
She's from the Dallas area, and when I met her, she already had three kids. One is a toddler, the youngest one.
Hey, you built it? Oh, okay, good job. You did it.
Good job.
So
good.
Her older kids are 8 and then 6, and she has this baby that's on the way. She's quite pregnant. She's due very soon. So she really had her hands full with a lot of kids.
Oh, no.
Want me to kiss him?
Oh, no.
Okay. Go take her baby sister.
The reason she didn't want us to use her name is because she's a survivor of domestic abuse.
The reason that you don't want to be identified is because you're concerned about your safety, right?
Yes, ma'am.
She and her partner had some financial problems during the pandemic. He was working in construction and his work slowed down.
We pretty much end up having to downsize. So we left our place and moved to his mom's. And
she had been working in bookkeeping and had to stop working because she got really sick with her pregnancy. And they were in the process of moving in with his mom when he kind of lost it, she said, and attacked her and started choking her until she passed out.
It was a little girl from the neighborhood. She was trying to wake me up.
So she fled with her youngest little girl.
I knew there was a park nearby, and I just tried to find my way to the park, and I did. And I went into the girl's bathroom, and I locked the door, and I pushed this heavy metal trash can in front of the door. And I called my sister, and she came, immediately.
And so then she's separated from her older boys and trying to figure out what she wants to do going forward, how she's going to support herself.
After Elle was picked up by her sister, she made an appointment at a nearby abortion clinic. How did it go?
That's right. Elle had decided that she needed to have an abortion. She went to the clinic to get an ultrasound. She was unaware that Texas had just the month before passed a new law that restricted abortions to before there was any kind of fetal cardiac activity. It was called a heartbeat law. That was usually at about 6 weeks. So she had the ultrasound, and the staff at the abortion clinic told her, "You're too far along. You're too many weeks pregnant. We can't help you."
Once they told me they couldn't help me, they gave me a form and they circled for me to go to New Mexico. And I'm thinking, how am I gonna go to New Mexico?
She had never traveled out of state.
I've never gotten a train or plane or boat. And mind you, I left everything behind, my car, clothes, car seat, anything you could think of was, I didn't have besides me and my phone and my daughter.
So she just couldn't fathom how she was gonna do that.
And I just soaked it all in, and I was trying not to go to the car and cry. And I just took a breath, and I walked out.
So she's leaving the clinic and in the parking lot when she encountered some anti-abortion activists who approached her and told her that she wasn't alone and referred her over to Birth Choice, which is in the same office complex as the abortion clinic.
She gave me the brochure, and she... you know, tells me to read it, and she verbally tells me, you know, what all they offer. And at this point, I was thinking kind of too good to be true. Like, who helps pregnant women with children and has all these outlets, you know? Like, is it that easy?
Wow. Elle walked out of the abortion clinic and ran into Birth Choice.
Yeah, and this often happens. People will either come to go to the abortion clinic or they'll be leaving. And these folks who Birth Choice staff refer to as sidewalk counselors, they're Catholic volunteers, will give them pamphlets about Birth Choice, refer them, even walk them over and take them into the Birth Choice office.
So when Elle ended up going to Birth Choice, what was her experience there like?
So overall, it was positive.
They called me back there, and it was like, a relief. It was like my turn. You know what I mean? It was my turn.
She went in. She felt like she was treated with respect. She went through a counseling session where a staffer tried to figure out what she wanted, what she needed in order to not have an abortion. And the main thing was housing, being able to reunite with her sons, and also some sort of a job to support herself independently.
she comes back in and she was like, I found you a place, it's perfect.
And so they connected her with Blue Haven Ranch, which is a maternity home that provided her with an apartment.
And she was like, they accept kids. And now I just started crying. Because at that moment, I was like, I can get my sons, you know, because I pretty much just vanished.
She was able to reunite with her older sons. They're now attending school there. And the maternity ranch did a bunch of other things for her, like threw her a baby shower, took her to get a 3D ultrasound of her baby, which it turns out is a boy.
So do you have a name picked out yet?
I do. His name's going to be Kaysen.
How do I spell that? K?
C.
Oh.
She's allowed to stay there rent-free, and they also provided furniture while she's pregnant and then like up to 18 months afterwards.
Blue Haven Ranch, what's its relationship with Birth Choice?
So they're part of this sort of unofficial network of pregnancy help groups. Like I mentioned before, like adoption agencies, places that provide supplies to pregnant women or counseling.
My name is Aubrey Schlackman, and I am the founder and executive director of Blue Haven Ranch.
Aubrey Schlackman and her husband are evangelical Christians who live outside of Dallas. And last year, they decided that they wanted to help women by opening this maternity ranch where they would provide free housing.
We pay for their apartments and their utilities associated with that.
And other resources to help expectant mothers.
Oh, yeah. I think it's about being pro-mom, like, hands down.
She feels strongly that being anti-abortion is about more than just abortion bans. It's about helping women and supporting women so that they can make choices for themselves.
I think the focus has been so long on the issue of the baby, whereas personally, I don't think the baby, it's not a problem, you know, because yeah, okay, if the abortion solves the baby issue, well, you haven't done anything to actually help the mom.
So they have about 5 women who are there now, and they have a waiting list of 7. And she said, if Roe does get overturned, they're going to need a lot more organizations like hers, networks like this, because there's going to be a lot more need.
If you're going to restrict it, even though I think it's the right direction, there has to be more that comes along beside that restriction to support the repercussions.
So collaborations like Blue Haven Ranch and Birth Choice, that's a bigger strategy for the anti-abortion movement right now.
Exactly.
But with abortion becoming more difficult to access across the country, are pregnancy centers and their networks offering enough? And can they keep up with the demand? That's after the break. Molly, pregnancy centers have already seen this big increase in demand in states that have made it harder to get an abortion. What's it going to look like nationwide if Roe is overturned as expected?
So pregnancy centers are advocating that they can fill these gaps in a post-Roe world. They're saying that they're a piece of the puzzle in overturning it, but that then going forward, they're going to be, you know, looking for an infusion of resources so that they can meet the needs of women who will increasingly be turning to them. But the critics say that there's no way that they can address the more complicated long-term needs, for instance, medical, financial, of not just these women, but also their children.
Because places like Planned Parenthood, it's not just about giving abortions, it's about health and all these other things. But at the moment right now, it seems like a lot of these pregnancy centers don't have all those other services, medical services that Planned Parenthood has.
That's right. And it's even beyond Planned Parenthood. It's, you know, after a woman has a baby, those babies then need pediatric doctors, and the women may need follow-up care or have follow-up conditions that develop as a result of having kids or multiple kids. And those are not things that pregnancy centers can really address. These are broader problems with the healthcare systems, particularly in the states that have very restrictive laws or are poised to outlaw abortion altogether, like Texas. The other thing about pregnancy centers is that they have increasingly medicalized, is what critics say, that they present themselves as clinics. with even the word clinic in their name. They have staff who wear white doctor's coats or scrubs. And so women who go there, they may think that they're at a clinic and that they're getting ultrasounds, for instance, from a trained medical professional, when it may just be a volunteer.
So a lot of them don't even have medical training.
Correct. And also, because they're not technically medical facilities, they're not subject to the same kind of monitoring, oversight, or required training or guidelines that medical clinics are.
And some of the medical information these pregnancy centers promote seem really questionable, like abortion reversals. Is that really a thing?
Yeah. So they've been offering abortion reversal increasingly because pro-abortion folks, in anticipation of Roe maybe getting overturned, have been trying to make abortion medication more available by mail, for instance, through groups like Aid Access that mail it from overseas into states that have restricted access to medication abortion.
Well, there's been a push by the pro-abortion lobby to try to make that just a national platform, that you could be anywhere in the country and we will mail you your abortion pill.
So in response to that, pregnancy centers are promoting this idea that if you take, like, there's a series of several pills. If you take the first pills and then change your mind, you can come in and they will refer you to a doctor who gives you progesterone, with the idea that that will stop the medication abortion or interfere.
That's a big thing, because if people don't know that there is an opportunity, they probably wouldn't consider, you know, doing anything about it. They might just kind of let it happen.
So when I was at Birth Choice, I asked Aaron Fowler about medication abortion reversal, and he said that's something that they have really tried to stay on top of, both because it's been something he sees the pro-abortion movement stressing, the availability of medication abortion, but also because he said there's this narrow window of time where they can offer it. And there are some studies that say that that's possible, but those studies have really been discredited, and official organizations like the American Association of Obstetricians and Gynecologists have said this is not something that's supported by science. So while some of the services that pregnancy centers are providing are suspect from a medical or a scientific perspective, the pregnancy centers are providing things that women do need, things like car seats, diapers, and formula, which, you know, we're amidst a national shortage right now. So these are things that women want and that do help them.
But do all of these services, legitimate or not, actually mean that women who have access to them would stop seeking abortions?
Yeah, it's something that I asked Elle, and she said if she could, she would have gotten an abortion. But remember, she didn't qualify under the Texas law.
This has been the hardest pregnancy I've ever had to go through. I'm grateful for it. I'm grateful for my baby. And then I'm one of those women who can carry a baby. But in reality, if I would have had the option to do at the time what made me happy, I would have done it. I didn't know what I was gonna do. And I felt alone. And I also felt like I was gonna be set back from what I really wanted to do. It's like a reset button, but not a full reset.
Finally, Molly, what are Elle's plans for the future?
So she's at home with her kids and going to school online to become a certified bookkeeper.
I have my books over there. I have 7 books.
Oh, here's your little study station.
Yeah, this is my workstation right there. I sit there quite often, but I end up getting distracted so easily.
She now lives in a Dallas suburb, and she's hoping to stay there even after she moves out of the maternity ranch to find a place there, because she said her kids are doing really well in the schools there.
I like it over here. My kids love it over here. The schools are amazing. I think that's really, oh gosh.
So overall, she's in a good place.
I am. I really am. My kids are too. When we go outside, it feels good to go outside.
Molly, thank you so much for this conversation.
Thanks so much for having me.
And that's it for this episode of The Times, daily news from the LA Times. Kasia Brasalian was a chef on this episode, and Mike Heflin mixed and mastered it. Our show is produced by Shannon Lin, Denise Guerra, Kasia Brasalian, David Toledo, and Ashley Brown. Our editorial assistant is Madeline Amato. Our engineers are Mario Diaz, Mark Nieto, and Mike Heflin. Our editor is Kinsey Moreland. Our executive producers are Jasmine Aguilera and Shawnee Hilton, and our theme music is by Andrew Epin. And if you have a chance, please take a minute and go to latimes.com/podcast survey and answer a few questions about our show, what you like, what you don't like, what you want to see more or less of. Your input, as always, is a gift. So gracias in advance, and I'm Gustavo Ariano. We'll be back tomorrow with all the news and desmadre. Gracias.